Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very much from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, December 1st, 2020. The fight against HIV/AIDS continues as the world commemorates World AIDS Day.
We've done remarkably well in advancing treatment with antiretrovirals to pregnant women to reduce mother-to-child transmission.
And a South Sudanese student stranded in Cuba is very sick.
They sent us to Cuba or other parts of the world to study, but they don't care about the next problem. They don't care about how you eat. They don't care about how things are. And then things become difficult sometimes, but there's no one around to help.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is World AIDS Day, an annual event the United Nations has instituted to bring awareness to the sufferings caused by HIV/AIDS and what is being done by scientists, governments, non-governmental organizations and community groups to prevent and treat the virus, which UN claims has cost between 32 to 45 million lives since it was identified during the 1980s. This year's theme is Ending HIV/AIDS Epidemics, Resilience and Impact. Many AIDS victims around the world are children who contract AIDS in the womb. A report released by UNICEF last week cites mixed progress over the past year in terms of the effective and widespread testing and treatment of HIV/AIDS among both mothers and their children, a challenge the COVID-19 has made more difficult. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Dr. Chiwe Low, UNICEF Global Chief in charge of HIV, to learn more.
We've done remarkably well in advancing treatment with antiretrovirals to pregnant women to reduce mother-to-child transmission. In Eastern and Southern Africa, for example, the most hard-hit area for HIV, up to 95% of women in 2019 access antiretroviral treatment to prevent mother-to-child transmission. But that is counter to what we are seeing in Western Central Africa, where access is just above 50%.
Why the huge disparity between Southern Africa and Central and West Africa?
There are many reasons. One of the things that is becoming clear to us is the quality of maternal child services. Having good access to prenatal care and having good access to postnatal care is part of the solution. One of the key reasons as well we see in West Africa is just user fees for services. So economic barriers to accessing healthcare. But we've done amazing things, mainly in clinics in Eastern Southern Africa, trying to advance testing at the community level using outreach services that we normally do for immunization. Women will come up and be tested as they bring their children for immunization. And that has worked well. We need to do more of it. And there are efforts working with churches and church facilities to popularize family testing. So there are solutions, but understanding the context is very important.
And of course, the COVID-19 pandemic is a complicating factor.
Now, with COVID, we're already seeing major disruptions in testing services, especially for children, because of the fear that mothers have about COVID, so they don't want to go to health facilities. But I think as we start to see the vaccine being taken up, maybe we'll see a convergence of testing for COVID and testing for HIV in children, and maybe these disruptions will start to go away.
A little earlier, you spoke about testing and treatment disparities between regions within Africa, but your report also cites testing and treatment disparities between mothers and their children.
85% of women living with HIV are accessing treatment today. That is compared to 54% of children 0 to 14 accessing treatment.
One might think that when mothers go to the clinic to get tested or treated, that they'd bring their kids along to get tested and treated too. But difference in dosage and the drugs themselves for the two groups makes that difficult. What is happening to make drug treatment easier for children?
In many developing countries, we've tried to work with pharmaceutical industry to make sure that we move beyond syrups because they're expensive, first of all, and it's not always easy to get clean water, but also refrigeration for formulations like that. The good news is that increasingly we're getting the products that we need for use in the very young children.
I know there are some very promising same-day tests that have been developed and approved recently.
And we need to roll those out. And that's going to be a huge game changer. We're working with a number of countries to make sure that when these diagnostic technologies become available, we can quickly put them into the system so that children can benefit. Because with same-day results, we can actually initiate treatment immediately compared to mother comes in, take the sample, put it on a filter paper, post it out somewhere. Samples get lost, results don't get transmitted, and sometimes it takes up to 2 months before you get that result. There's an urgency as a pediatrician. This is something very close to my heart. We have seen declines in mortality. We just need to do better so that we can save our children from dying of AIDS-related complications.
That's Dr. Chiwe Lo, UNICEF's global chief in charge of HIV, speaking with my colleague Phillips Adam. One of the 11 South Sudanese students stranded in Cuba with no money for food, transport or other basic needs has fallen sick. John Matiang, who is stuck in Cuba without any support from his family or the South Sudan government, traveled to Cuba to study on a government scholarship. Students from other African countries who are studying in Cuba are contributing money for his medication and return ticket to Juba. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
29-year-old South Sudanese student John Matiang has been studying in Cuba while battling a mental illness called schizophrenia, a medical condition that affects a person's ability to think, feel, and behave properly. Doctors diagnosed him with the disease in 2018. Matiang has received no support from his family in South Sudan, according to fellow students who are taking care of him. African, Asian and the Caribbean Students Associations began a crowdsourcing campaign among students to raise money for Matiang's return trip to South Sudan and for his medication, and have so far raised a little more than $2,200. Haidnesh Akrizo, a student from neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and the leader of the African Students Union in Cuba, says the money will be used to buy a plane ticket home for Matiang. Akrizo says African students in Cuba are helping Matiang because they know he needs to be in the care of his family as he fights schizophrenia.
The second reason is the lack of resources of his family and the standby of the reply from your government. So as an organization, it was very important and indispensable for you to look for other alternatives. We have responsibilities to integrate, to support, defend all African students in the
David Kokulo Sumo Jr., a fourth-year medical student from Liberia and an executive member of the African Students Union in Cuba, says helping Matiang was important to him because he is aware that sometimes African governments send students for studies abroad but then abandon them.
They send us to Cuba or other parts of the world to study, but they don't care about the next problem. They don't care about how you eat. They don't care about how things are. And then things become difficult sometimes, but there's no one around to help. All they say is that they gave you scholarship. So coming together as African students, coming together as family is very important because we are the same people that will help one another to solve our own problems.
Kagiso Anthony Mabale, a third-year South African medical student in Cuba, describes Matiang as a good-hearted, humble and a respectful person who needs help. Mabale tells South Sudan in Focus that some Africans studying abroad experience hardships that they cannot overcome on their own.
Through the African Union, we became a family and we can help each other as students, as Africans, as brothers and sisters without considering the nationality. And as South Africans, we were instilled with the spirit of Ubuntu, a spirit to be helpful to one another. And we saw that our brother is in need.
Mabale says it's important for African students studying in foreign countries to not only help each other in times of need, but also to motivate each other to be better people. Akius Makasa, a Burundian medical student at the Latin American School of Medicine in Cuba, says he decided to help Mathiang because the two became friends since he began attending school in Cuba more than 3 years ago.
I think solidarity should be one of the values which characterize young people, especially nowadays, in order to face all the challenges of our humanity, like poverty, hunger, etc. Because with solidarity, I think we'll be able to help each other indifferently and contribute to make the world a better place.
Some of the 11 South Sudanese students in Cuba graduated last year. Others graduated in August this year, but are stranded in Cuba without money for airfare to come home. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Three communities that have engaged in clashes and cattle raids have agreed to end violence and reconcile. Leaders from Pakam, Rup, and Kwae communities ended a 5-day peace conference over the weekend where the leaders resolved to hand over guns to the government. For VOA News, William Sandy Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Members from the Pakam, Rup, Kwae communities ended the 5-day peace conference in Rumbek on Sunday. Youth from all three communities promised to forgive each other and forget the past for the sake of a better future. Makir Malek, a youth who says he has taken part in the intercommunal fighting, says he is tired of violence and ready to peacefully coexist with other communities in Lagos State.
We have been fighting for 6 years and we have not gained anything. Instead, we have incurred heavy losses. We have lost our brothers, children, and mothers. We accepted the initiative of organization and our government for bringing us to Rumbek. For this reason, we will not fight or loot cattle again.
Marshall Ditt, another youth who fought for the 6 years in the cattle camps, says he lost his brother and two cousins in the separate attacks. Ditt says he always wanted to revenge his relatives' death, but has changed his mind after attending the peace conference.
During the days I have spent here, we stay together with those who used to fight us before, but now we are living as brothers of one father. I have seen those who were enemies working with our people together. I believe there is peace.
Majir Majuk, a peace governance officer with the British charity that funded the conference, Oxfam International, says he is optimistic the peace deal will hold because the resolutions were reached by youth, the people who were often the key players in intercommunal violence.
They are the ones that fight themselves, and they have come in huge numbers from both Ruba and Pakam. And the first 2 days were all given to the youth directly from the cattle camp. Those that shoot themselves, those that fight themselves, they were mainly the one actually giving people assurance it will not be like other peace. And they actually disclosed that the rest of the peace dialogue, they were mostly sidelined. When they are the right people, that should be the one talking among themselves.
Majuk is urging the three communities to maintain peace, noting development and aid agencies will only provide services in their areas if there is peace. David Arubdukchen, a leader from the Pakam community and chairperson of Peace Conference's organizing committee, says he believes the communities will not fight again due to the 18 resolutions they have agreed to uphold.
There will be no road ambushes and revenge killing. At the same time, we agreed that there will be no cattle sap. At the same time, they agreed on the issue of random robbery that should be stopped. They also talk about the fear that is actually developing in them, that there will be no fear among the communities.
Stephen Matiang Dengmundit, a community leader, says communities in Lagos State have been yearning for peace for the past 6 years. He prays youth for agreeing to coexist peacefully after several years of bloodshedding, blood in intercommunal fighting.
Now they have realized themselves. This is what we have been looking for the last 6 years. Our people killing themselves for no reason. The young men have been fighting themselves from this section of Rup, Pakam and Kwey. The young men who fight have accepted to live peacefully as brothers. Among them, Rup and Pakam. All what happened, like the cattle stolen, people killed, they have accepted peace without condition. They have given peace a priority.
Several peace talks and conferences between the Rup, Pakam and Kwey communities were held in the past, all of which were all violated by the three parties. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting in Rumbek Lake State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, health experts say malaria is still a killer disease. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the mode of travel you most often use to get to work?
Thank God I have a car for over 9 years, so I drive my car to go to my workplace. But sometimes if it has a problem, I use tricycle.
I usually use the minibuses, but more oftenly, I just walk from where I live because within the area that I work.
I have an old bicycle. I ride on it anytime I'm going to work.
I use the public transport to work most of the time because it's easily accessible and it takes me to where I'm going.
I ride in my husband's car to work. He has his own car, so every morning he picks me and drops me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at the fight against malaria. The World Health Organization is calling on countries to step up the fight against malaria. It wants a lot of progress that has been made in rolling back malaria over the past 20 years, risks being reversed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
This year's World Malaria Report celebrates the extraordinary progress in malaria control in the 20 years since African leaders at a summit in Abuja adopted a declaration pledging to work to stop the spread of the disease. Since 2000, the UN's World Health Organization reports 1.5 billion malaria cases and 7.6 million deaths have been averted globally. Some of the greatest achievements were made in sub-Saharan Africa, which bears the brunt of this deadly disease spread by mosquitoes. Additionally, the director of the WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says 21 countries have eliminated malaria over the last two decades. Of these, he says, 10 have been officially certified as malaria-free by the WHO.
That means that more than half of all the world's endemic countries are within reach of elimination. At the beginning of this century, three countries had less than 10 cases per year. Now we have 24 countries which are literally one step away from elimination.
Despite remarkable progress, however, the World Health Organization reports global gains have leveled off in recent years. This is because of insufficient funding and a lack of access to proven malaria control tools, such as insecticide-treated mosquito nets and preventive medicines for children. The emergence of the coronavirus pandemic is now posing an additional challenge to the malaria response. WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says the gains made in Africa over many years against poverty and disease risk being reversed by the virus responsible for the COVID-19 disease.
Already, malaria causes a 1.3% loss in Africa's economic growth every year.
And we know that the COVID-19 pandemic is projected to push sub-Saharan Africa into recession for the first time in 25 years. This incredibly challenging situation requires renewed commitment to sustain and accelerate the gains that have been made in the fight against malaria.
Moeti notes, malaria continues to kill many more people than diseases like COVID-19 and Ebola. In 2019, the WHO reported the global tally of malaria cases was 229 million, including more than 400,000 deaths. It said 90% of these cases and deaths were in the African region. Most of the victims were children. The UN Health Agency reports global funding for malaria last year totaled $3 billion. This falls far short of the $5.6 billion needed to roll back malaria. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan has recorded 650,000 incidents of gender-based violence from November 2017 to October 2020. That's according to a report by the United Nations Population Fund. Juba, the capital of South Sudan, has the highest rape incidents, totaling to nearly 2,000 cases within a period of 2 years. Alexander Dimiti is the director for reproductive health at the National Ministry of Health. He says while sexual gender-based violence cases have declined in recent months, incidents of physical and emotional abuse have increased during the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Alexandra Dimitri, Director General for Reproductive Health in South Sudan National Health Ministry, presented the UNFPA report in Juba last week during the launch of this year's 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Dimitri says, while sexual and gender-based violence cases have declined in recent months, incidents of physical and emotional abuse have increased during the coronavirus pandemic. He says statistics shows 97% of cases involving gender-based violence were female survivors. Dimiti says about 3,000 survivors access medical care across the country. He says the trend has changed from sexual violence to physical assault due in part to fear among the perpetrators over contracting infection like HIV/AIDS.
Qualifications of sexual assault, considering that there's the exposure to a number of illnesses, diseases like HIV/AIDS, a number of sexually transmitted infections, maybe people are now getting more, enlightened about the dangers of this, and that's why they are resorting more to physical assault.
Dimiti urges parents to enroll their children in sex education classes or talk to them about sex before they learn about it from friends.
It's important for parents, for example, as they socialize their children, whether they are girls or boys, to talk to them about sexuality. Because many of the girls, for example, are not aware of, or even the boys, they are not aware how their body, how their anatomy, how they function. And it is important that the parents talk about sexuality in that way. Because, in South Sudan, cultures actually prevent people from talking about the issues connected to sex, especially even the parents. The first people who should actually tell the children are the parents.
Major General Daniel Justin, spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, says the Interior Ministry has deployed more female police officers to stations across the country to handle cases of sexual violence. Justin says even though most South Sudanese understand the seriousness of committing sexual and gender-based violence, rape is still being reported at high rates on the outskirts of Juba.
The situation has changed a lot because the work we did with the other stakeholders have helped us to actually sensitize the people. Most of our people now, they know this sexual gender-based violence and domestic violence are crimes and they are to be reported to the police and the law is to take its course.
Justin says police are working to arrest suspected rapists and other perpetrators of gender-based violence once the case is reported to their office. He is urging the general public to provide substantial evidence when reporting an incident of rape or other types of sexual abuse.
It depends on the evidence you provide, because most of our people, they take these cases from public domain, from media and so on, without knowing even when we arrest somebody, we need to take him to court with concrete evidence, you see. But for them, when you arrest somebody, they think he must go to prison. Sometimes no evidence against that guy.
In those cases, Justin says, the suspects are often released. South Sudan Chief Justice Chan Rech Madut acknowledges that rape is rampant in the country. He says the Justice Ministry is working to establish a special court to handle sexual and gender-based violent crimes.
To be frank, we were supposed to open a Givi court the 25th, but because it coincided with this function, I decided that we have to push it ahead. Hopefully, in the coming few days.
The South Sudan Penal Court states that whoever commits an offense of rape upon conviction shall be sentenced to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 14 years and may also be fined. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We'll now leave you with Benjamin Laksing singing about HIV/AIDS. Listening to Benjamin Laksine singing about HIV/AIDS. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you are leaving your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Be you.
Uganda.
Nasi motu kadir mayande.
Ni junu ni fiki.
Nasi motu kadir mayande.
Fi Kenya.
Nasi motu kadir mayande.